we all go through our own struggles at some point in our life, and mental health or mental well-being, it's on a spectrum. You're not going to be incredible and amazing all the time. There will always be peaks and troughs, and it's just about maintaining a balance and being able to process if something does happen in life. What are your go-to habits, and how can you look after yourself to make dealing with that challenge a bit easier?
Hi, I'm Sarah Kearns, and welcome to the podcast. This is a safe space to discuss the topics affecting everyday families. Let's take an inside look into our own realities and the realities of others. We'll learn together as knowledge creates empathy. Empathy shapes the way that we act, and those actions can change our family and those around us. This is the Conscious Project. Kendall White is the founder of the Blue Tree Project, a project that was created after losing her brother Jane to suicide that has seen people all over the world painting dead trees blue. Kendall is courageous in her work and in her vulnerability as she spreads the message, it's okay not to be okay. Content warning, this episode discusses suicide and self-harm. If you need further support after the podcast, please see the show notes for services. Hi, Kendall, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Sarah. It's lovely to be here talking to you today.
It's so wonderful to have you. And, you know, these conversations can be so big and so difficult. And, you know, it's just thanks to people like yourselves who are willing to share their story and the incredible work that you're doing in this sort of community that will allow all of us to get a really great insight into what we can be doing and how we can be more empathetic and more involved with the your mental health community and all the issues that they face.
Yeah, absolutely. Blue Tree Project has been incredible for doing that and creating the conversations within community. So I'm really excited to be able to go a little deeper into that today.
I actually only have just learnt about the project in the last few weeks when a tree popped up on our main street or a main street into our suburb. And the kids were like, wow, what is going on? How come that tree's blue? And I sort of said, I'll have to look it up. I don't know. So for anyone listening that has no idea, I'd love for you to give a bit of an intro because I know that you'll explain it much better than me.
Blue Tree Project is a not-for-profit that has come out of a personal tragedy of mine after I lost my brother in November 2018. He was 29 when he took his own life, and the Blue Tree Project was inspired by a story that was actually shared at Jaden's funeral, and it's the story of him and a good friend of his going out to our family farm in the middle of the central wheat belt here in Western Australia in a town called Muckinbooden. So it's a very special place. And yeah, he painted this tree blue randomly on our farm. And so it was that special friend of his that shared this story on what's been one of the hardest days of my life. And from that story, it's inspired some friends of ours to go and paint a blue tree in memory and shared it on Facebook. And once it was shared on Facebook, something really special happened in that it sort of went viral. It was shared and shared right across the platform, and before we knew it, we had people putting photos of blue trees that they had painted in the comments section. So that's sort of how Blue Tree Project has come to life, and it's all happened very organically, very grassroots, and have only really been going for 2 years now, so quite a short space of time to get to where we are now.
Yeah, wow. And how many trees are there so far?
probably near on 700 trees that have been registered with us so far. So, yeah, it's incredible. They're not only in Australia, other parts of the world now. So Scotland, in US, New Zealand. So very special with the power of social media, just how far and wide they have spread now.
Yeah, absolutely. That's incredible. So I'd love to have a chat about your brother and what that looked like for your family. I think everybody has, you know, somebody they know that's been touched by suicide in some way or form. But unless you actually live that life or live that reality with your own family, I think it's absolutely impossible to understand what families go through with that kind of a trauma. Was there any lead up to Jaden's passing that, you know, you guys were knew that this could even become your future?
Every family's experience will be so different, and it's really such a horrible thing to go through, and those that don't understand it, you are the lucky minority. So yeah, you're very blessed, but those that have experienced it, like me and my family, it's something that's really hard to come to terms with, because you hold a lot of guilt and I suppose shame potentially. And I say that only because of the stigma that has been so real with mental health for so long. And I've tried to take on a way of talking about it, that I'm very open and very transparent and very vulnerable about it, because I think it needs to be spoken about a lot more. And in the lead up to Jaden's death, it definitely wasn't something that we saw coming. He was living in Sydney at the time, and it was a very traumatic couple of days, in the sense that the hospital, so Jaden had called the police, concerned for what he would do to himself, and then they obviously took him, or had him taken to emergency, where he's been assessed. And obviously tried to contact my family. Now, for those that don't understand, sometimes the signal in regional areas can be shocking. So if you're not home to answer your landline, you can rarely answer a phone unless you're in the town centre on your mobile. Mm. So a message has been left on our family home line, and it's the hospital saying that Jaden was there, but he was okay. He's been released and he's going to work. So obviously, as any parent, mum has heard that phone call, and she's just done what any parent would do and has raced down to Perth to catch a flight to Sydney. Mm. She's called me and I've jumped on this plane with her, and we had no idea what we were going to do, basically just go and check in on Jaden and see if he was okay, and hopefully bring him home. That trip to Sydney is just really traumatic thinking about, and arriving there and trying to find Jaden and going to a police station and filing for a missing persons, because we couldn't find him or he wasn't answering our calls. And that evening we had someone knock on our hotel door, the police that were on the case, and told us that they had found Jaden and he'd taken his own life. Little did we know at the time that he'd actually admitted himself to hospital again later that same day and was released again. So that's our circumstances in the lead up to Jaden's death, and everyone's is very different, but each one is just as traumatic as one another. So I have to say it's still so hard to think about that trip, and having to identify a brother is just something I never wish upon anyone ever. Yeah, shocking.
No. And I think, like, speaking from obviously a former police officer's point of view, I think that the logistics behind a family member's death is something that people that haven't been through it don't understand. And, you know, there's all these formal paperwork that needs to be completed and, you know, things put through to the coroner here in New South Wales and all of these kinds of things that, you know, formal identification, taking family members, and it's just so traumatic and so horrific for the families to have to go through.
Yeah, no, it really is. And there is likely to be a coroner's, well, there is a coroner's inquest into Jaden's death just because of the high number of people he did come into contact to in the lead up to his death. And being a male, 29 years old, it's just that severe target age group that makes it difficult to process as well.
Yeah, of course. And did he have a diagnosis before this of any kind of mental health issues?
No. So there was no diagnosis of anything. He was living in New South Wales or at Sydney at the time. So obviously it's very different trying to keep a relationship with someone who's living in another state. We had visited him a couple of months before and try and keep in contact when we can. But yeah, I think that face-to-face contact is just so important to really get an idea of how someone is.
Oh, absolutely.
And how they are going. So that's why it's so important to be checking in face to face, because it's very easy to reply to a text message saying, yeah, I'm fine, yeah, I'm good. It's just our automatic response.
Yeah, I think and so for the people that don't understand what happens when, so like speaking as an ex-police officer, when somebody makes a threat or says that they've tried to or are going to try and commit self-harm or that they're having these thoughts, the first thing that police will do is obviously take them to the hospital and they can schedule them there involuntarily. But it then becomes a handover to a hospital where, you know, a doctor will assess and then send them on their way. And I've actually personally had this exact situation happen to me as a police officer, and I took a young child, he was only 14, to the hospital. I actually pulled him off a train track and, you know, risked my life and got onto a live train track and removed him, and it was very horrific in front of a big audience of people, and took him to the hospital, and within 4 hours he was back out and was successful in committing suicide. And I will never forget that family for as long as I live. But I just think that people don't understand how, you know, for someone to get to the stage where they're trying to hurt themselves, or that they're actually telling people, these are the thoughts I'm having, and to be released in such a short amount of time and not helped, is just unacceptable. And it's just something that severely needs to change in this community and the way that, you know, we deal with mental illness as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the dynamic of mental health in our community has just changed so much, and we now know that people who are in crisis, they shouldn't be going to an emergency department for health checks. It's not an appropriate space for someone in that headspace to be going. And I think doctors feel powerless in that situation as well, because if you've got limited beds and you've had people in car accident or severe accidents, of course they're going to be looked after before someone who's walking in who looks completely fine, but inside they've got a huge battle going on. So it's a national problem. I hear this problem everywhere of people not knowing where to go for help. And I think that's where we're trying to help as well. We're trying to bridge a bit of a gap between educating people. If you are struggling, raising that awareness, these are some of the places that you can go and get help as well. Obviously, it differs dramatically between states, but it's definitely a huge problem Australia is facing now, particularly after COVID and those extra pressures that we're seeing. And I fear to see the numbers, not only that will be released this year, but even the following few years. I think it's a really scary prospect.
Yeah, I agree. It really is. And I think that we can't even imagine what it's done to a community's mental health as a whole, having the mess that was 2020 and what people are still struggling to get back on track. And, you know, particularly other parts of the world, like, I mean, we're pretty lucky here in Australia now that things are quite, you know, quite good, but worldwide, it's just, you can't even comprehend, I think, what the long-term effects are going to be.
No, definitely not. It's mortifying to think about it. I just know in Australia alone, it's been significant. And like you said, we've been so lucky. So yeah, I think it's a huge world problem now, mental health. Absolutely.
I think that mental health is definitely being spoken about more, and, you know, it is a lot more on social media, and awareness and things is definitely coming out. But do you think as a community, it still has quite a long way to go with the people you've been speaking to, you know, during the Blue Tree Project?
I really think we are seeing some great advances in the views of mental health or mental well-being, because I know mental health has sort of become a term that people are a bit exhausted by almost. But I think it's just mental well-being that is needs to be a constant throughout our life. And I'm talking raising our kids to be kind to their mind and being kind to others. It starts like that. So I think we are getting somewhere, but we definitely have a long way to go, like many other issues that we're facing at the moment. And I do see a lot of positive change within maybe the metropolitan CBD areas, but I know some of the regional and rural areas are a bit slower or a bit stuck in their old ways. So I only say that with the regional events that we go to, some of the older generations, the older farmers in the agricultural industry that I've seen, it's still so walls up, man up, toughen up, rather than letting that all down, be vulnerable, sharing your story and empowering others to share their struggles as well, because we all go through our own struggles at some point in our life. And mental health or mental well-being, it's on a spectrum. You're not going to be incredible and amazing all the time. There will always be peaks and troughs, and it's just about maintaining a balance and being able to process if something does happen in life. What are your go-to habits and how can you look after yourself to make dealing with that challenge a bit easier?
Yeah, I think that's such a great point, because we really do sort of, you know, further with the stigma to just sort of say, oh, well, those people are mentally unwell, unlike myself, who's not at risk at any of these things, as opposed to us all going through these different seasons in our lives and being more vulnerable to, you know, not being able to cope with whatever life's throwing at us at the time. So it's having those coping strategies in place.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a big one on that because I'm doing the project full time now. It's so emotionally involved. I have to have serious boundaries and coping mechanisms to be able to shut off from my work life, whatever that is, because it's so ingrained in my personal life now. But I do have to try and find that balance and have those coping mechanisms. Having a bit of play each day is what I say. So this morning I went to the beach and had a swim and had an acai bowl and read my book. That's my play for the day. And then I've switched off and I can relax and then I can get back into work mode. So having something each day that I can do for myself is really important to make sure that I'm not giving too much of myself away, because every time I hear someone's tragic story or I tell my tragic story, I'm giving a piece of me away, and it can take a long time to build that back up. So yeah, it's something that I have been working on a lot more recently after I was pretty burnt out at the end of last year. 2020 was just really crazy and ended up being far busier than I could have expected, which is very special because we saw a lot of growth for our project, but I didn't keep tabs on it, and I was definitely pretty burnt out when it came to December, January.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's unfortunate that we generally get to that stage where we really burn out before, you know, we realize that we actually need to, as cliche as it is, fill our own cup before we can pour from it, because it's just so true.
Yeah, I'm sure that's something that you definitely have to balance a lot. You've got so much going on as well. So, I mean, what are some of the things that you do? What are your coping or go-tos?
Oh, gosh, I know. The lake and the water is always, like, when you said that, I was like, that's, you know, that's my thing too. My nan used to say that we had my uncle was born severely disabled, and he was, you know, absolute beyond a full-time job for my nan and my pop. And my nan actually picked them all up, moved the entire family to the beach in Bondi, and was like, to Manly, and said, like, the salt water is going to fix everything. And, you know, I love that so much, because I just think it is such a beautiful way to reset your mind, and it brings so much clarity, and it really does reset everybody, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're very much like that.
Lovely. That's good.
Yeah. No, but I think, like, obviously as emergency service side, I think that's why police and even, you know, hospital staff and all of that do become quite clinical and quite, you know, separated from what they see, because, like you said, it's literally taking a part of you every time you deal with trauma or you meet a family. And, you know, I know that every single deceased job that I went to during my 11 years, I was just devastated for the family. And the family's part of their grief would be to talk about their loved one, and you would listen and hear all of the things and try and pick those bits out that you needed for the formal paperwork out, obviously, but get to know who this person was. And it's a lot to take on. So I can only begin to appreciate how much emotional energy this whole project is taking, and you're doing incredible things, because I live in a very small town on the lake, and the trees popped up on our main road. So it's incredible.
Oh, that's so special to hear. How far and wide. Big communities, small communities. I mean, the trees have been painted by schools, universities, companies, by community groups, whether it's sporting or school groups. It's incredible to see so many people getting involved, and so diverse in terms of age and demographics. And it just shows how much of an issue mental health is to everyone.
And it's doing its job. Like, the first thing my boys said was, wow, why is that tree blue? And, you know, and it started this beautiful conversation. And obviously, so my kids are 7, 4, and 2. So obviously very age appropriate, but they're already trying to start dealing with mental well-being at school and talking about these kinds of things and how we deal with things, and trying to really move away from those toughen up mentality that, you know, you were talking about earlier. So it's such a beautiful way to, you know, explain it to them and say, oh, when we see that, we check in with each other and we say, how are you feeling? And how are you okay? And are you coping with everything okay? And are you feeling happy when in moments where you should feel happy? And, you know, is there too much things that you're sad about? And all these little things. So now my boys, every time we drive out this road, which is obviously like at least twice a day, they say to each other, are you okay? Are you having times of happy when you feel happy? And little things like that. And I thought, imagine if they're still doing that by the time they're in their 20s and 30s and they're at that really vulnerable stage for men, how incredible that would be if our boys are still saying to each other, are you feeling okay? Like, and, you know, are things still happy? I just think that's such a beautiful way to phrase it for them.
Yeah, that is really incredible to hear. And we've heard similar stories with families on road trips and seeing these trees, and it's that visual reminder, and they are so striking in the landscape that it does create those conversations, which I think is why it has taken on a life of its own. And yeah, to hear that, it makes it so worthwhile for me that if we can have our kids asking each other if they're okay and building in that habit, I think it's just crucial. It's beautiful to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who else feels
overwhelmed with the amount of things on their plate. Things they need to remember: piano lessons, swim club, guitar tuition, footy practice, accountant appointments, preschool days, Brad work trips, my work trips, library day, school banking, school discos. I just can't keep up. I often stand at my kitchen bench trying to work out what to pack, what to tell them to grab, what food they're going to need. Knox, grab your guitar. Enter Kelly and her daily orders. Kelly is a mum from Victoria who spent a long time in the Navy. The Navy has daily orders that tell staff where they need to be, what they need to do, and even what to wear. As she settled into her new role as a mum, Kelly realised she needed daily orders to stay on top of her family's life. Simple, easy-to-use, wall-mounted planners designed for families by an Aussie mum. Choose between small, medium, and large wall-mounted planners and weekly, monthly, and annual designs. They simplify your week while fitting nicely into your home without being an eyesore. Daily Orders is a registered NDIS provider, has Afterpay and ZipPay, and are designed and manufactured in Victoria, Australia. Use code SARAH10 at www.dailyorders.com.au. That's SARAH10 at dailyorders.com.au for 10% off store-wide.
So I'd love to talk about how we were saying about how you support yourself. So obviously at the moment you are, you know, actively doing things to help yourself, you know, deal with all of the trauma and stories you're taking on, but you've obviously, it's taken a couple of years to get to that stage. And, you know, straight after Jaden's death, how did you navigate, you know, that initial grieving period and other people and what, you know, they were saying or doing, or, you know, how did you find that transition back into the world?
That's an interesting question. I have been very lucky in that I have an incredible, incredible support around me, whether it's my work friends, my old school friends, my partner, our extended family, and also small country communities are like none other. And I sleep so much better at night knowing that mum and dad are being looked out for them all the time. So I feel like that took a bit of weight off me. If I'm being completely honest, I feel like I haven't grieved properly because I have taken on this project, and I feel like to be able to do what I need to do, I haven't processed it 100%. There are times where people's stories will break me down, and I mean, my trauma and grief comes out in that sense. Talking with others and sharing stories with others. I also, I went and saw my work's EPA. I used to work at Seven West Media here in Perth, and I actually had to leave because I was a video editor there, and seeing the grief of families in this video footage after losing a loved one in a car crash, it was just too much. So I actually left my job there. But the services there are incredible, and I've had work colleagues who recommended it. And I use different apps to meditate. That's a big one for me. It helps me sleep, and sleep is so important for me. If I don't sleep properly, I'm a wreck.
Yeah. Oh God, I feel that.
Yeah. So I've used Headspace, and I've used Calm, and meditating is a big one, and like breath work is another big one. So yeah, if I'm being completely honest, I definitely am still processing it, and will forever. I think there's always things that you think of, or did I miss something here, or my last phone call with Jaden, like I remember where I was, and it just haunts you that you didn't ask more questions or you didn't do more. So I think there's that guilt factor that weighs in a lot as well. So there's a lot to process, but I think having the Blue Tree Project really helps our family a lot, and we're so lucky, and I hate using that word really, but we have this legacy that honors Jaden, and lots of families don't have that. So it's not just about Jaden, obviously. project is so much bigger and it's for so many people now, but it is that something special that he will live on through. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And it's born from people that loved him and continue to love him every day. And that's just so special. I can so relate of building that legacy, and it doesn't take the pain away or the grief away, but it's a beautiful distraction. And it's a beautiful thing to think that you are helping other families perhaps avoid your reality, which is just such a special gift.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what it is. It's, we want to stop other families from having to go through what we can. So these trees, we just hope start many conversations that can, avoid other devastating circumstances like ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you, for people that may be listening who are going through a trauma like yours, or, you know, that they know of friends or families that are going through such a trauma, what would be your advice for how can they support those people? Because I know when we were grieving for our first baby, I felt, even though it was my loss, I felt like I would almost go into this like support for everybody else. Like I felt like everybody else was so sad all of the time that I almost needed to reassure them all of the time.
And
I moved into this weird thing where I'd be saying to people, oh, it's okay, it's okay. And I'd be thinking, it's not okay, but I'm telling you this because I'm trying to solve your grief. But how can people support them without that having, you know, without taking on that responsibility?
It's funny you say that. I read something the other day that said, don't suppress your emotions to make others feel more comfortable. And that really struck a chord with me. And I was like, wow, that's something I could relate to as well. Absolutely. Same as your story. But something that people can do if they're a bit worried or feel like they're not equipped, which I think lots of people feel that way, I cannot recommend enough the mental health first aid course. Now, this is something that that I have done recently, and it's just incredible. It changes your perspective on approaching those conversations that you feel like are going to be quite difficult, and it gives you like a bit of a framework on how to work through it. So we all go and get our life saving, we go and get our first aid, our bronze medallion, etc. Well, I think this is something that needs to be taught like in schools, in police academies, in the hospitals.
I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, so it's incredible. So I'm trying to spread the word on it, but mental health first aid course, and it really does equip people, I guess, with the tools that they need to go and have those harder conversations. And I think it's done wonders already for conversations that I've had, making others feel more comfortable to open up with you. It's not it's not an interrogation or anything like that, obviously, because you care about them that you are having the difficult conversation. But I know it is something that a lot of people feel uncomfortable with, hence why they avoid it. So I would definitely start there. And it also helps educate everyone on a lot of the services that Australia has to offer. We are lucky in that we do have some pretty incredible services for mental health here in Australia, such as Lifeline, which we have so much respect for. They're on the front line, and their calls have just skyrocketed since COVID, which is just so troubling to hear.
The statistics are horrific.
Yeah, I think there was pretty much a 50% increase on calls within the year. So that's huge. But prevention is key, and having these conversations with someone that you might be worried about early on is so important. So I definitely recommend everyone go and do your mental health first aid course. And
yeah, that's amazing. We'll put all of those details. All of those details in the show notes for people to be able to access, because like I said, I've never even heard of it, and that just sounds incredible. And and to be able to bring those into every family would just be so life-changing, I think.
It will help people pick up on a lot of things that or signs that you can recognise within someone who's slightly changing or their behaviour, withdrawing or isolating. Yeah, I couldn't recommend it enough.
And what about any practical tips for people that perhaps are trying to support someone through a loss like this?
Yeah, that's a difficult one in that you're always wanting to look after your loved ones, and some people will naturally take on a lot more emotionally, such as yourself, than others. And like, I feel like I've been quite a large support for my mum in particular. Not that anyone else in my family hasn't, but sometimes it will naturally weigh on certain people a bit more. My partner has obviously looked after me significantly, so I've had him to lean on. But in terms of practical tips, there are lots of services that can help provide you with information, but making sure that you are looking after yourself, and I think that comes in so many different forms and shapes, like myself taking time to go to the beach and turning off my phone and not being there for anyone but myself, like you sort of mentioned earlier, making sure your glass is full, because it really makes all the difference in being able to communicate properly, not being tired or exhausted or snappy, and things sort of escalating in a sense. So yeah, it's a really difficult one, and it's very personal on what works for each person, I think. And men and women are very different in their behaviours as well. So women, we really enjoy talking. We can sit down with a cup of tea on a couch and just talk, whereas men just can't do that. They need to be doing something. So generally, if you can organize activities like playing a round of golf or going and doing something that's practical, even painting a tree, it's very practical. And I think it's that's what they need. So, just sort of being aware of that as well.
Yeah, they're such great ideas. And I think for those people that are, you know, friends or, you know, those sort of one step out that could just be, you know, keeping all of this in mind and perhaps, you know, making food or dropping things over like that, that's really not confrontational at all, not forcing them to talk or things, but just knowing that they're going to then hopefully, you know, be able to eat good food that's good for their bodies and try and.
That's huge. You know, it's so huge. We had that from our community, and I don't know, it was just something, it's not something I've ever experienced. So until food was being delivered to our family, I mean, going to the shops and grocery shopping, it's just not something you even factor in. Like, you're processing something so huge, and that was just incredible. So if anyone who baked us a lasagna or some of your amazing stews are listening, thank you so much. Like, it was just a huge help to be able to open the fridge and grab something out and just not even have to make that decision. Taking that decision process away was incredibly helpful. Yeah,
absolutely. Kendall, tell me about Blue Tree Day. It's actually the day before my little one's birthday, so I am never going to forget this day now.
Yeah, so we have only just done this in the last year, and we've started a Blue Tree Day in that everyone can get together, find a dead tree that needs a blue lease on life and paint it as a group. So that ties in with Mental Health Week in October. So 10th of October is the date. And, it's just a great opportunity for whether it's a sporting club, a school, your company, any sort of community group to come together and create a symbol for the town that will help start so many conversations without a doubt. So, that's exciting, and we urge everybody out there to get involved and get your hands dirty. It's a great practical activity that all the kids, big and small, love getting involved with.
Like you said, it's so practical and it's so hands-on that it just, it makes those conversations start, and it just, it normalizes them in such a normal environment. It's not something like, I need to be at a doctor's office to be able to talk about this kind of stuff. It just takes it out into the community, hands-on, and it's just, I think it's just absolutely brilliant.
Yes, it's very, it's a very cathartic process for lots of people. So it's special to hear.
And how can people find out more about the project?
So we have a website, www.bluetreeproject.com.au. So we've got lots of information on how you can get involved, whether you want to volunteer, some tips and tricks to painting a tree or hosting a fundraiser day. And we're obviously on all the social platforms as well. And yeah, please go and have a look at our Instagram feed. It's just, it's so special to see these hundreds of trees that have been painted, and each one just has their own story. So yeah, I urge everyone to go and have a look at some of those incredible photos.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And it's such a, I think, a back to that non-confrontational kind of way to spark those conversations with people that perhaps you are worried about, or, you know, you don't know how to ask them if they're okay, to be able to, you know, simply forward a post or tag them in something and just go, you know, wow, isn't this amazing? And bring up that conversation the next time you see them. And it's just such an organic way to start those really, really hard conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, they're very special conversation starters, and that practical activity, getting your hands dirty, which we don't get to do anymore. So I think that's why it's been so effective. So yeah, go and get your hands dirty and have some fun. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And we'll put all the links to all of that in the show notes so you guys can find them all super easy. But I'm so grateful for your time today, Kendall. I know it's so difficult for you to talk about, and so emotional for you to talk about your family and your, you know, your experiences, and that you must be so proud of yourself and everybody else involved in what you've created, because it really truly is special.
Thank you. And I just want to finish by saying that if anybody listening is feeling emotionally exhausted, please do speak up and reach out, because there is always someone there who wants to help you get through it, and you don't have to do it alone. So, yeah, thank you, Sarah, for giving me this platform. It's really special. Thanks.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in today. I would love to continue the conversation with you over on Instagram at The Conscious Project Podcast. Hit subscribe so you don't miss our next episode. And I would be so grateful if you would take a moment to leave me a 5-star review. It really does help. Take care.